Sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on milk when we come back. You know the genocidal policy of Global 2000, the New World Order? And while they're the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood, now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Now that's correct, 90% over the next 50 years, so let's not delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, all of these philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane quest to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny, a thing that they call the New World Order upon all of us. But we don't have to participate in our own demise, and we don't have to help them, we don't have to finance them, and we don't have to stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following all of these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, my subsistence and survival school is available in compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, send me an email request for that free general law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about utter destruction, U-D-D-E-R, utter destruction, from the book The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized by William Campbell Douglas. And at the end of the chapter, they made an observation, they made a reference to a publication called the Certified Milk Magazine. Certified Milk Magazine. It was the national organ of the raw milk producers of the 1930s. They were infiltrated and subverted by the pasteurized milk forces, kind of like a cloak and dagger CIA KGB operation. The ultimate outcome was the pasteurization forces won the war. That's why today you can't buy raw milk in America. It's not available. There's a couple of exceptions to that. Altadena Dairies in California and Mathis Dairy in Georgia. All the rest of us are stuck with pasteurized milk. Actually, no milk is better than pasteurized milk, but milk is a very important nutrient. It's spoken of in the Bible quite often. You know, there's a story in there about Abraham, and Melchizedek came out. He was on his way over to Sodom and Gomorrah. It's about Genesis chapter 18. So here's Melchizedek. That's Jesus of the New Testament. He's on his way over to Sodom and Gomorrah to nuke them, and he stops for lunch over at Abraham's place. It's actually about 65 miles from Jerusalem over to Sodom and Gomorrah, and about halfway over, 30, 40 miles, he stops by Abe's place, and Abe goes out and puts on lunch. And at lunch, they had meat, milk, butter, and eggs. Yeah, they killed a fatted calf, drank milk, and ate butter. Did it all at the same meal. I know it ain't kosher, and I know it ain't right, but, you know, that's God for you. He always does the unexpected. Anyway, the fact that he drank milk is a precursor to other stories in the Bible about the land of milk and honey. I mentioned that to you, that the Bible talks very highly about milk. William Campbell Douglas wrote a book that says the milk of human kindness isn't pasteurized. Tough book to come by. There's not too many of them out there. It's worth its weight in gold. It's got a number of neat chapters, all well documented. Let me give you the name and number of the book again, and then we'll take a look here. Real milk cures many diseases. You know, milk is a therapeutic agent. Milk is a medicine. Milk heals sick bodies, but it's not pasteurized. Now, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. William Campbell Douglas is the guy's name that wrote it. Put out by Last Laugh Publishers. He's got a sense of humor. Last Laugh Publishers. 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315, Marietta, Georgia, 30067. Once more, that's Last Laugh Publishers. 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315, Marietta, Georgia, 30067. I'm just citing from the book. I don't know if that address is good or not. And the publisher, printed in the United States of America by Copple House Books Incorporated. Copple House Books, C-O-P-P-L-E, House Books Incorporated, Lakemont, Georgia, 30552. That's Copple House Books Incorporated, Lakemont, L-A-K-E-M-O-N-T, Georgia, 30552. Now, Copyrighted 1985, William Campbell Douglas, M.D. You may not be able to find that from the publisher or from the printer. My experience tells me you go to your used bookstore. I don't know how many of these books were published, 5, 10, 20,000, whatever. Whatever was published back in 1985 got sold or out there somewhere. And then when people read these books, you know, people die and then they send them off to the used bookstore. Well, if you were to go into your used bookstore, we have a couple of them around this neighborhood. What I do is I go in and I say, listen, I'm looking for this book. William Campbell Douglas is the guy's name that wrote it. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness. It's not pasteurized. They'll plug that into their computer and they'll look around and they'll find a copy of it in South Africa or Atlanta, Georgia or Los Angeles, California. And they can get it for you. That's the way I do it. Give it a try and you'll be glad you did. Well, real milk cures many diseases. The following is an edited version of the article by Dr. J.R. Crewe, C-R-E-W-E, of the Mayo Foundation. Now, the Mayo Foundation was the forerunner of the Mayo Clinic of Rochester, Minnesota, published in Certified Milk Magazine in January 1929. We are grateful to Dr. Ron Schmidt, naturopathic doctor of Middlebury, Connecticut, for unearthing this fascinating piece. It's called The Milk Cure. It was the subject of at least two other books written by other authors, written subsequently to Dr. Crewe's work. Now, the milk used was, in all cases, the only kind of milk available in those days, raw milk from pasture-fed cows, rich in butterfat. The treatment is a combination of detoxifying fast and nutrient-dense feeding. Note that Crewe quotes William Osler, author of a standard medical textbook of the day. Thus, this protocol was an orthodox accepted therapy in the early 1900s. Today, the Mayo Clinic provides surgery and drug treatments, but nothing as good or as elegant as the milk cure. Here's the story. For 15 years, the writer has employed the certified milk treatment in various diseases, and during the past 10, he had a small sanitarium devoted principally to this treatment. The results obtained in various types of disease have been so uniformly excellent that one's conception of disease and its alleviation has necessarily changed. The method itself is so simple that it does not greatly interest most doctors, and the main stimulus for its use is from the patients themselves. To cure disease, we should seek to improve elimination, to make better blood and more blood, to build up the body resistance. The method used tends to accomplish these things. Blood conditions rapidly improve, and the general condition and the resistance is built up and recovery follows. Now, in several instances, Osler, Principles and Practices of Medicine by William Osler, M.D., 8th edition, speaks of milk as being nothing more than white blood. Milk resembles blood very closely and is a useful agent for improving and making new and better blood. Blood is the chief agent of metabolism. Milk is recognized in medical literature almost exclusively as a useful food and is admitted to be a complete food. The therapy is very simple. The patients are put at rest in bed and are given at half-hour intervals small quantities of milk, totaling from 5 to 10 quarts of milk a day. Let me repeat that. 5 to 10 quarts of milk a day. Most patients are started on 3 or 4 quarts of milk a day, and this is usually increased by a pint a day. Now, diaphoresis, copious perspiration, is stimulated by hot baths and hot packs and heat in other forms, and a daily enema is given. The treatment is used in many chronic conditions, but chiefly in tuberculosis, diseases of the nervous system, cardiovascular and renal conditions, hypertension, and in patients who are underweight and run down. Striking results are seen in diseases of the heart and kidneys and high blood pressure. In cases in which there is marked edema, and results obtained are surprisingly marked. This is especially striking because the so-called dropsy has never been treated with large quantities of fluid. With all medication withdrawn, one case lost 26 pounds in 6 days. Huge edema disappearing from the abdomen and legs with great relief to the patient. No cathartics or diuretics were given. This property of milk and edema has been noted in both cardiac and renal cases. Now I'm going to back up here a second. We have a plague developing in America called autism, a nervous disease, a disease of the central nervous system. And the treatment that's being mentioned here, real milk cures many diseases. This is the only cure that I've ever read about or ever heard of. The doctors mentioned nervous disorders. In almost all other publications, they'll tell you, well, these treatments work, but they don't work for central nervous system disorders. Now, notice that the doctor here points out that blood, in this case of milk, is similar to blood. And in the Bible, we're specifically told not to eat the blood, not to kill an animal without bleeding it. So you have to bleed the animal. Now, this milk is a therapeutic agent. And it just could be, No, I'm not a doctor and I'm not advocating this, but it just could be that milk therapy might do something for these little children with autism. So you might be thinking about that. Now, here's another factor that just came up. I just saw this the other day dealing with GMOs. Up in Appleton, Wisconsin, a public school of all places, I could hardly believe it, a public school, put in a program of nutrition I mean, they took all the Coke machines out and the candy bars and all the rest of the crap, and they started a nutritious program of fruits and vegetables. How they got these kids to eat fruits and vegetables is beyond me, but they found out that their vandalism has dropped, that the students are less disruptive in class. Students that have good nutrition are better learners. They're having better test scores. They don't have kids running around and jumping up and down and swinging from the chandeliers and things like that. So it goes to show you what nutrition will do. So why don't you think about that? This real milk cures many diseases. You can get off the web. It's www.realmilk.com/milkcure.html. So if you want to jot this one down, it's www.realmilk.com/milkcure.html. Real milk cures many diseases. Now, this is a 1929 article. See, time was in America when we were concerned about curing diseases. Today, nobody wants a cure. We want a treatment. No doctor wants to cure you of your disease because it shuts off the money supply, shuts off the revenue. So if we just treat you, just keep you coming back to the doctor's office every week or twice a month so that we can keep giving you refills on your prescriptions, that's where the money's at. In the old days, they were interested in, well, what was it that would cure? You know, for instance, you got scurvy, you want to give you vitamin C, you got rivets, your rickets, we want to give you vitamin D. You've got some other disease over here. We're looking for some food, some nutrient, some herb that will cure the disease, that will give you the nutrition that makes your body heal itself. So I want to read this last paragraph again, last paragraph on page one. The treatment is used in many chronic conditions, but chiefly in tuberculosis and diseases of the nervous system. Now, that's the anomaly. You don't see that in other medical literature. They avoid the nervous system like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Nothing fixes your nervous system. Nothing will cure you. Well, anyway, Crewe says that, yes, you can heal chronic diseases of the nervous system. He goes on to say that patients with cardiac disease respond splendidly without medication. Now, remember I told you last time or time before that that's the therapy that was used on me in 1984 when I had heart disease. They gave me raw cow's cream, one cup a day, along with my pills that they were giving me that is called chelation therapy. Patients with cardiac disease respond splendidly without medication. In patients who have been taking digitalis and other stimulants, the drugs were withdrawn. High blood pressure patients respond splendidly, and the results in most instances are quite lasting. The treatment has been used successfully in obesity without other alimentation. One patient reduced from 325 pounds to 284 in 2 weeks on 4 quarts of milk a day, while her blood pressure was reduced from 220 to 170. Some extremely satisfying results have been obtained in a few cases of diabetics. Now, I want to caution you folks out there, because oftentimes I get letters from you, and sometimes the letters just scare the bejesus out of me, because they're the exact opposite from what I've said on the air. You can't do this with pasteurized milk. Don't go down to Kroger's now and buy a gallon of milk and bring it home and start drinking. It kind of reminds me of my sister-in-law had cancer. And my wife, of course, is a recovering cancer patient also, and she used juice therapy. Well, in juice therapy, you get a Walker juicer, and you know you spend a couple $1,000 on these super-duper juicers, and she was using juice, and the sister-in-law said, well, can I buy canned carrot juice? Canned carrot juice. You know, the heat-treated stuff that's pasteurized and homogenized and protects you, you know, from catching cold and flu. Hey, listen, this stuff has to be natural raw foods. We're filled with enzymes and vitamins and minerals. We're not talking about, you know, with plastic food here. We're talking about the real McCoy. Most of you people have never heard of real food. You've been eating plastic all your life. Refined foods, junk foods, you know, Hostess ding-dongs and Twinkies. You know, that's not food. That's a manufactured product. That's an industrial product like benzene, kerosene, and gasoline. You make it from a raw material called milk. Well, listen, you have to drink the real raw milk, and most of you people cannot even get real raw milk. I mean, you could get cocaine or heroin or marijuana anywhere in America, but you cannot get raw milk. Now, if we could develop an underground economy for raw milk, if there's a demand out there, you can rest assured that there will be, hell, the drug dealers will give up cocaine and marijuana, and they'll supply you with raw milk. You know, if there's a demand, there's no demand out there for raw milk, so you can rest assured that you're not going to find any of this stuff out there. Now, should you be lucky enough to find somebody with a milk cow in the neighborhood or some dairyman around here that might sell you some, you've also got the problem with these commercial dairies. You know, they feed bypass protein, BHT, penicillin, and other antibiotics. I mean, the milk supply in America is probably worse than the water supply, which isn't fit to drink. So you're kind of on your own there, boys and girls. If you want to know where to get raw milk, I haven't got a clue. I mean, if you were living in my neighborhood, I've got it here. But, I mean, you're not going to find raw milk out there in America. Now, in California and Georgia, you might be able to find it. And if you live close to California, you know, you're in Nevada, you might be able to skip across the border. You might even find somebody coming out of California that would smuggle some real raw milk out of California to Arizona, Nevada, or Oregon. I mean, that could happen. Now going on, he says, patients with cardiac disease respond splendidly without medication. When sick people are limited to a diet containing an excess of vitamins and all the elements necessary to growth and maintenance, which are available in milk, they recover rapidly without the use of drugs and without bringing to bear all of the complicated weapons of modern medicine. Now, I would really be fearful and timid about going to a commercial dairy and taking the milk out of there, even if it was raw. And that's because the milk that comes out of these commercial dairies, well, it's piped through pristine stainless steel pipes. They're feeding these cows with bypass protein. That is, they feed them with animal food, animal. You know, they take the animals, grind them up, dry them out, and feed it back to the animals, turn them to cannibals, what they do. We don't think that's very good. It's been shown that that causes mad cow disease, Jacobs Creutzfeldt disease. I'd just be scared to death of that, but then, you know, let your conscience be your guide. I think what you're looking for here is some guy that's got a cow, you know, down the road from you, and milks a cow for his family, maybe has a couple of them. Now, you might be able to get some clean milk there. You ought to ask, are you feeding bypass protein, dairy ration, or something from Purina? If he is, that milk isn't fit to drink either. It's not the hares and the flies and the manure in the milk that we're concerned with. It's the bypass protein, the prions, it's the BHT, the penicillin, and all the chemicals that are in the milk. I think that's worse than the flies, the hare, and the cow manure. Anyway, when sick people are limited to a diet containing an excess of vitamins, can you get this? This is 1929. An excess of vitamins and all the elements necessary to growth and maintenance which are available in milk. They recover rapidly without the use of drugs and without bringing to bear all of the complicated weapons of modern medicine. Under the head of treatment in chronic gastritis, Osler has said a rigid milk diet should be tried. Principles and Practices of Medicine by William Osler, MD, 8th edition. And quoting from George Kine, he wrote, milk and sweet, sound blood differ in nothing but color. Milk is blood, under the heading of treatment in many diseases. It was true that he had little to say about drugs, but did say a good deal about diet, and particularly as in most every instance, he recommended large quantities of milk. Under chronic Bright's disease, page 704, he says, milk or buttermilk should constitute for a time the chief article of food. Under treatment of cancer of the stomach, page 505, he says, many patients do best on milk alone. Under treatment of rheumatic fever, page 378, he says, milk is the best suitable diet. With Osler as a background, one need not hesitate to go a bit further. In fact, practically all medical men are agreed as to the value of milk as a food and as an important part of the diet in the treatment of many diseases. But as the chief remedy in the treatment of disease, it is very seldom used. Very seldom used. Been around for 3,000 years, recommended by God in the Bible, and it's very seldom used. Interestingly, diseases that have no similarity respond equally to this treatment. For instance, psoriasis clears up beautifully on milk therapy. The improvement in tuberculosis or nephritis is equally interesting, but there is no similarity in these diseases. I once heard a very distinguished medical man discussing a case of psoriasis, and he said, quote, this was the worst case of psoriasis that I'd seen. This boy was literally covered from head to foot with scales. We put this boy on a milk diet, and in less than a month, he had a skin like a baby. To me, this means that there was evidently some nutritive substance or vitamin or glandular secretion lacking in this child's diet that had been furnished by the milk. You want to keep in mind now that milk is called nature's perfect food because it's all that a calf has. All of the vitamins and minerals that this calf has to live on for the first 3 or 4 months of its life comes from that cow, comes from the mother. Now, I want to remind you that when calves are sucking on a cow, they're drinking raw, unpasteurized milk. And I want to emphasize that because I know you're going to rush out and buy some milk at Kroger's that's pasteurized and homogenized and say, I heard it on the Lawnmower. There's no doubt in my mind that some of you people are going to do that. So I want to emphasize this again. It's not the milk you get in the grocery store. It's the milk you can only get from a cow, not the industrial chemical processed product that you get in the grocery store. And this stuff is the real food that comes right out of the cow. I know you've probably never heard of that before, but I want to remind you a second or third time. Now, for more than 16 years, I have conducted a small sanitarium where milk is used almost exclusively in the treatment of various diseases. The results have been so regularly satisfactory that I have naturally become enthusiastic and interested in this method of treating disease. We used good Guernsey milk equal to 700 calories to the quart. 700 calories to the quart. Interestingly, diseases that have no similarity respond equally to this treatment. For instance, psoriasis clears up beautifully. It is well known that there is no time in the life of practically any mammal, but especially of the human, when the body is so beautiful and perfect as during that period, when milk is the only food. It will be admitted that there is no period in life when the body is so perfect as in infancy, the infant being fed on milk from a healthy mother. The Arabs are said to be the finest race physically in the world. Their diet consists mostly of milk and milk products with fruits and vegetables, with a little meat. And you are all familiar with the writings of Colonel McCarrison, a medical officer in the British Army. He tells us that for 9 years he was stationed in India in a district in the Himalaya Mountains. He said that the natives were very fine physically, that they retained a youthful appearance to advanced age and lived long, and that they were very fertile. During the 9 years of his residence there, he saw practically no disease, no cases of malignancy or abdominal disease. The diet of these people was simple and consisted principally of vegetables and fruits and milk products. Stephenson wrote most interestingly of the Eskimo, who, when uncontaminated by civilized conditions, were hardy and robust people. Their diet, of course, was almost entirely of meat and fish, and he tells us, however, that the habits of meat-eating people are similar to those of carnivorous animals. The wolf first attacks the heart and gets the blood, and then later eats the glandular organs and viscera, leaving the muscle meats till the last. The Eskimo does the same thing. During one expedition, Mr. Stephenson and party started on a 9-month trip over the Arctic ice with only one day's provisions. All previous Arctic explorers had said that civilized men could not live in the Arctic Ridge regions without bringing in their supplies. Mr. Stephenson and his party during the 9 months were almost never without an abundance of food, and much of it was eaten frozen and raw. I wish to show from Stephenson's experience first that it is possible for people to be robust and to maintain good health on various types of food of limited variety, and that the condition common to all types of diet is that much of the food is eaten raw. And I wish to say here that our very excellent results obtained in the treatment of disease were had with uncooked food and raw milk. So uncooked food and raw milk. Cancer is called the cooked food disease. Cooked food disease. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And then finally, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. All right, tonight we're talking about milk. The milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. I'm citing from an article published in the Certified Milk magazine, January 1929, by J.R. Crewe, M.D., using milk as a therapy. Now remember, the milk being used here is raw milk, raw milk. It is not pasteurized. It is not homogenized. It is not chemically preserved. It is not irradiated. It has all the vitamins and minerals and all of the enzymes that come right directly out of the cow. If you don't have that kind of milk, don't do this. The experience of seeing many cases of illness improve rapidly on the diet of raw milk has suggested more and more the feeling that much of modern disease is due to an increasing departure from simple methods of preparing plain foods. The treatment of various diseases over a period of 18 years with a practically exclusive milk diet has convinced me personally that the most important single factor in the cause of disease and in the resistance to disease is food. And I have seen so many instances of the rapid and marked response to this form of treatment that nothing could make me believe this is not so. Now, this is a wild new concept. Instead of drugs and surgery, this doctor said, you know, I haven't seen anything work better than good food. Whole raw food, milk being the chief. Now, the minute you start using manufactured chemical products, of which milk is the chief, now all of a sudden you have a disintegration of health, degeneration. We've often seen most satisfactory results in the treatment of anemia, including pernicious anemia on a milk diet. And I have repeatedly seen a marked reduction in the size of simple and toxic thyroid with improvement in the symptoms of the toxic one. In prostatic diseases and associated conditions, this treatment will achieve rapid and marked improvement in the infection and in the reduction of the gland and the lessening of obstruction. A professor of surgery is one of our state universities, or in one of our state universities, once said to me, "Since I've used your method in preparing prostate cases, I've had most excellent results and no mortality." I replied that if he had continued the treatment a little longer, he would not need to operate. All infections of the urinary tract are greatly improved by this treatment. Whole raw milk. An old friend of mine, a woodcutter, age 74, had a marked heart lesion and complete prostatic obstruction so that it was necessary to use a permanent catheter. He had been taking Digitalis, but this was discontinued, and he received no medication of any kind. The prostate was very large, and the residual urine was very foul. His recovery has been rapid, and he has been able to work since that time and is now in very good health at age 77. Another local man was treated 6 years ago for a severe chronic winter cough and prostatic disease, which necessitated his getting up many times at night. He volunteered the information a few days ago that he had no more trouble with any illness since that time using this milk therapy. Indeed, we had a number of patients who took the treatment for beauty treatment. The tissue becomes firmer, and the general appearance is markedly improved. One patient with very advanced cardiac and nephritic disease lost over 30 pounds of edema in 6 weeks. One would expect the large quantities of fluid would increase the edema, but the above experience has been repeated many times in lesser degrees with good results. Hypertension responds with equal gratification. The blood pressure improves rapidly. I've never seen such rapid and lasting results by any other method than milk therapy, and one of the patients lived almost exclusively on milk for more than 3 years. About 10 years ago, a very sick man came to the sanitarium suffering from a severe cystitis and nephritis. He was a diabetic. As milk contains about 5% milk sugar, we were afraid that he could not manage this amount of sugar, but he did manage it, and he improved in every way, and in 8 weeks was sugar-free. Now, my experience with milk diet and diabetes has been limited but very interesting. These few patients, only 7 or 8, have been much pleased with the results. Insulin was used for a time in some of the cases. They all became sugar-free, or nearly so, after from 4 to 10 weeks of milk therapy. From the fact that these patients were able to use a much more liberal diet than diabetics usually can take after the treatment, it would seem to indicate that at least a partial regeneration of the pancreas is possible. And recently I received a letter from a soldier who was confined in a government hospital in Arizona for tuberculosis. He said a former patient of mine had induced him to try this method. He said that he had done so, and that he had done so well that a number of the men were also attempting it and had written for more definite instructions. He also said that the patients had to buy their own milk and received no encouragement from the hospital authorities. And there is a large class of patients who are ill but in whom no definite organic lesion can be found. These patients are often underweight. They may consume a fairly large amount of food, but they do not gain in weight or strength. These patients do respond, however, and very admirably to our system of large quantities of milk. The chief fault of the treatment is that it is too simple. Patients attempt to do it at home, but there are many pitfalls, and it does not appeal to the modern medical man at all. Now, this is from a group called A Campaign for Real Milk. It is a project of the Weston A. Price Foundation. That's spelled the W-E-S-T-O-N-A Price, P-R-I-C-E, Foundation. And you'll find it at PMB 106-380. I would assume that's postal mailbox 106-380. 4200 Wisconsin Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20016. Again, that's the Weston A. Price Foundation, postal mailbox 106-380. 4200 Wisconsin Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20016. They also have a website, www.realmilk.com/milkcure.html. Give it a shot if you're sick, and let's see if that does you some good. Now I'm going to start on, and we'll have time to finish, we'll start on ice cream. God, everybody loves ice cream, don't they? If God made anything better than ice cream, he kept it for himself. Oh, that's what we say about pig, isn't it? If God made anything better than a pig to eat, he kept it for himself. Now, ice cream is a pretty tasty product. You can make it yourself at home in an ice cream freezer. All you need is ice and rock salt and a formula. Stick it in the ice cream maker, crank the handle. If you're lazy, you get an electric one, and it makes ice cream. It's kind of like softy ice cream, you know, the stuff that you get, oh, in the restaurants. I don't know what they call it, soft serve ice cream. They used to call it when I was a kid. And then there's real ice cream. You know, the real ice cream is the stuff that's hard and comes in Häagen-Dazs boxes and so on. Well, have you ever wondered how that ice cream was made? You know, it's pasteurized and homogenized, of course. And then it's got certain additives and ingredients in it that maybe you'd never heard of before. Well, in the book, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. Remember, this is William Campbell Douglas. That's The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. William Campbell Douglas, M.D. Chapter 13, Ice Cream. Listen to this story. You need the scoop on ice cream. If you're an ice cream freak like me, watching the manufacture of ice cream at Altadena Dairy is almost a religious experience. The temple is the storage area where rich, luscious, creamy, natural, raw cream, gorgeous ice cream is stacked three stories high. Altadena ice cream is the only raw milk, raw cream, completely natural ice cream available in the United States of America on a commercial basis. And that tells you a lot about the status of our food supply in this country. Nero, the emperor of Rome in the first century BC, was an ice cream nut. He would have royal runners fetch snow from the mountains. The kitchen would cover it with honey, fruit, or wine. Nero loved this ice mixture so much that he made it illegal for anyone but himself. In the 13th century, Marco Polo proved that the Chinese were ahead of us in practically everything. He brought back an ice cream formula from the Orient. King Charles I was also an ice cream freak. He issued a 17th century royal decree to his cook that he must not divulge his ice cream recipe to the peasants. George Washington was crazy about the frozen delight. He capped two silver pots just for his ice cream. Dolly Madison served ice cream at the White House. Now, Altadena ice cream isn't cheap, neither is Häagen-Dazs. Neither is Copenhagen, Mathis, or Shiloh Farms, other top quality brands. But with ice cream, cost and quality don't always go together. A survey in Chicago, for example, rated one of the lowest priced ice creams as the best and the most expensive as the worst. Now, this was a flavor test, and it had nothing to do with the nutritional value of the product. When you're eating ice cream, you don't usually think about nutrition, but you can have ice cream that is both nutritious and delicious. Most ice creams are delicious and poisonous. Let me repeat that. Most ice cream is delicious, but poisonous. The first commercial ice cream was marketed in the United States in 1851 in Baltimore, Maryland. The producers at that time didn't know how to make modern ice cream. In 1851, they thought all you needed was raw milk, fresh eggs, cream, and butter, and of course, natural flavor. Today, a typical commercial ice cream contains skim milk, two kinds of sugar, our favorite waste product, whey, mono and diglycerides, polysorbate 80, gar gum, chemical flavors such as vanilla, pronounced vanillin, that's vanillin, chemical colors, and carrageenan. That's only the beginning. I'll come back to the additives after I tell you about the Alice in Wonderland called Standard of Identity. You ought to write that down if you got a pencil. Just write down Standard of Identity. It's a legal term. And as with most processed foods, regulations require that the processor tell you on the label what this product contains. Granted, many of these regulations are very vague, and although they don't have to tell you what has been done to the product, they must at least tell you on the label what has been added to this product. But that's not so with pasteurized homogenized milk. That's right. Pasteurized homogenized milk does not have to contain any label that tells you what we have put in here. So when you're buying a milk, not only is it pasteurized, not only is it homogenized, and not only do they tell you that we put in vitamin D, they don't have to tell you they put in vitamin D, but if they think it's good and that you'll buy the product, they'll tell you what they put in. But if they think it's bad and you don't want that, they don't tell you and they don't have to. And that's because of this funny legal term called standard of identity. Milk and milk products have a standard identity. I put that in capitals and quotes because it's a magical term that the bureaucrats of the Department of Agriculture invented to allow the milk industry to get away with murder, or at least nutritional mayhem. They don't have to tell you what's in the milk. They don't have to tell you what's in the milk that you feed your kids because the government regulators have given milk producers special dispensation. I don't know if they're Catholics or not, but they get special dispensation. They have said essentially that everyone recognizes milk and milk products. We trust the milk producers. Milk is milk. And so they don't have to tell us what they're putting into the milk as long as they heat the milk before they sell it. And now you might find that hard to believe. Well, if you find that hard to believe, then why don't you ask the National Dairy Council, you write that down, National Dairy Council, Rosemont, Illinois, 60018, and have them send you a copy of the publication B300-1-1978. It's entitled Newer Knowledge of Milk. You want that again? You think I'm lying to you? Okay, then you write to the National Dairy Council, Rosemont, Illinois, 60018, and you tell them to send you a publication. You want a copy of the publication. It's called B300-1-1998. It's entitled Newer Knowledge of Milk. Table 3 on page 14 is very revealing. Table 3, page 14. They don't have to tell you anything about the nutritional content of pasteurized milk or ice cream. They can add chemical coloring, emulsifiers, stabilizers, chemical flavors, and nutritive sweeteners. That's sugar to you and I. Nutritive sweeteners. That's sugar. And they don't have to inform you on the label. The same brand may even be different from 1 week to the next. It can be different from 1 week to the next. Now, that's the magic of the standard of identity. It's a confusing term, but it simply means it's a license to deceive, a license to lie. Now, grandmother never realized this, but ice cream is held together electrically. There are only 18 tablespoons of liquid in a full gallon of ice cream. You see, ice cream is mostly air, oil and ice crystals suspended in water. Did you get that? And the poorer the ice cream, the more air, the more ice crystals, and what's cheaper than air and ice? So the cheapest ice cream is the ice cream which is the poorest. It has more air and more oil, and it has less cream and less active ingredients than good ice cream. Air, oil, and water don't mix very well. It's the negative electrical charge that keeps everything in suspension and gives us that sinful, delicious mix that we call ice cream. Now, the main ingredient in ice cream, besides air, is milk fat. And there's only one reason the ice cream manufacturers use milk fat. It's not legal to call it ice cream if you don't use milk fat. And with the current national phobia about cholesterol and animal fat, this may change. Non-dairy ice cream, like non-dairy everything else, made from coconut oil and peanut oil, would seem inevitable. It's already standard in England. In fact, as the refinement of our foods continues, don't be surprised to find ice cream that requires no refrigeration. Just leave it in the box on your pantry shelf for a year. When you're ready for some of the noble glop, just add water, mix it in your blender, and pop it into your freezer. We told you about using the human mouth as a disposal system back in our junk milk chapter. Well, the ice cream makers do that also. Water pollution laws since 1960 forced the cheese companies to find a new way to dispose of whey, W-H-E-Y. That's because it's a waste byproduct of the chemical manufacturing process. It's like fluoride in the aluminum industry. It's a toxic waste. Well, the human gullet has proved ideal, and it's a cheap way to increase the milk solids in the ice cream to get the legal minimum limit. Dr. Philip G. Keeney, he's with the department. This is the Department of Dairy Science at Penn State University. Dr. Keeney said, nobody uses whey for positive reasons. They use it because it's cheap and because it's allowed. Whey has a metallic flavor that a buzzard wouldn't eat, but enough sugar and artificial flavor will cover everything. Dr. Keeney concluded, in a way, ice cream has become the sewage treatment plant of the cheese industry. Now we come to the bad part. Here's the bad part of ice cream. When you order a banana split at your neighborhood ice cream parlor, you may get vanilla-flavored ice cream, chocolate, and strawberry, but you'll probably get iperinol, a lice killer for vanilla, amyl phenol acetate for chocolate, and a solvent called benzyl acetate for strawberry. The toppings on this ice cream will probably be aldehyde C17 for cherry, ethyl acetate for pineapple. God, I can't pronounce this next one. Rutyraldehyde, spelled R-U-T-Y-R-A-L-D-E-H-Y-D-E for nut flavor. And a paint solvent called amyl acetate for that great banana flavor. It's all economics. You see, aldehyde C17 costs 7 cents per gallon of ice cream. But real cherries cost 35 cents per gallon of ice cream. It's nothing personal, boys and girls. It's just money. Aldehyde C17, 7 cents. Real cherries, 35 cents. So we give you the chemical. Now, there are over 1,000 different chemicals used in commercial ice cream. Now, there are 87,000 chemicals that we know about that are in the books. Well, there are over 1,000 different chemicals used in the manufacture of commercial ice cream. How about those beautiful colors added to ice cream to make your little loved one's birthday a truly memorable event? You will get tartrazine, yellow, to upset his little stomach, disamine, red, 6B for red, and indiotine for blue. He can also be poisoned with amaranth, poncitue, 2R, and titanium dioxide. Coal tar dyes are the major source of artificial coloring. Many of them are known to be potent cancer-causing agents. A single ice cream may contain as many as 55 chemical ingredients. Let me read that to you again. A single ice cream may contain as many as 55 chemical ingredients. If you really go El Cheapo, you might get refiner syrup as the nutritive sweetener. Refiner syrup is the last liquid product of the sugar refining process. It has been described by technicians in the field as practically inedible. Practically inedible. And we have to have a place to dispose of this. Whey, a byproduct of the cheese manufacturing process. We have to have a place to dispose of it. Otherwise, we have to pay to have it hauled out to a landfill someplace and disposed of properly. So we put it in your ice cream to get rid of it. In the same way that we use fluoride, which is a chemical byproduct of the aluminum manufacturing process. We have to have a place to get rid of it. So we put it in your drinking water. Otherwise, we'd have an expensive toxic waste that we would have to dispose of properly. Now, you need a good emulsifier. To make ice cream, you have to have emulsifier. It gives it a characteristic stiffness and richness. Grandmother, not being wise in economics and knowing nothing about chemicals, used fresh eggs from the hen house. Grandmother used fresh eggs from the hen house as the emulsifier in her homemade ice cream. Today, they use diethylglycol, whatever the hell that is. I mean, you got words in here, boys and girls, that can't even be pronounced by the English tongue. It's called antifreeze. You know, for those of us that can't pronounce the words, it's just antifreeze. And polyoxolefilene, which is suspected of causing cancer. They also use polysorbate 65. I imagine there's polysorbate 64 and polysorbate 63 and polysorbate 62 and so on down, don't you? Hell, there may be a polysorbate 86 and a polysorbate 87, I don't know. It deceives you into thinking that the ice cream has a high cream content. As a thickener, you may find dioctyl sodium sulfosinate. That's a mouthful, which is a chemical used in medicine as a stool softener. Well, that's good to know, just in case you needed it. Stool softener, a laxative. One of the most common additives to ice cream is called carrageenan. With this chemical, or when this chemical is added to water and fed to guinea pigs, they develop ulcers. Some scientists think it may cause ulcerative colitis in humans. Commercial ice cream is loaded with sugar. Sugar causes diabetes, and according to Dr. Norman Kretschner of Stanford University, sugar is a major cause of atherosclerosis. A person with hypoglycemia, that's low blood sugar, may faint or have a convulsion from eating sugar-laden commercial ice cream. The convulsions may be from the sugar or the chemicals, or maybe from both. We don't know. We could tell you about the additive CMC causing tumors and polysorbate 80 causing premature death in experimental animals, but I guess you get the message. If you want to get on an Eskimo pie in the sky trip, eat commercial ice cream. Commercial ice cream. Something else you should know, unlike milk, there are no federal standards setting the maximum number of bacteria to be allowed in this ice cream. So as we pointed out to you in Chapter 4, pasteurized ice cream has been a not infrequent source of food poisoning epidemics. They really get away with murder when they sell you reworked ice cream. Reworked ice cream. Do you know what that is? Well, reworked ice cream is a euphemism for covering up stale ice cream and selling it as fresh. You see, they just threw it back in with the fresh and add more chemicals, and presto, America's fun food, ice cream. You ever taste ice cream after it's been in the refrigerator for about 6 months? Well, just try it. Test it. Take some ice cream, stick it in the refrigerator. Just leave it there. 6 months. Pull it out. It's got ice crystals in it. I mean, this stuff tastes so bad. I mean, it is so gross, your dog won't eat it. Dogs are smarter than humans. Yeah, you won't eat it either because, you know, but now they take that out of the grocery store after it's been sitting there. You know, they manufacture the stuff and it's sitting in the warehouse. And maybe at 6 months old, they take it out and they remanufacture it. And after all, it's chemical glop anyway. What the hell is some more chemicals? And you wonder why Americans are sick? You wonder why 99% of us are showing symptoms? We got allergies. We've got diabetes, heart disease, stroke, muscular dystrophy, MD, multiple sclerosis. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I'm out of time. I'll tell you more when we come back next time about this thing called ice cream. But until then, boys and girls, let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches tax law, family law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.